Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. Happy Football Friday to all of you. Hope you're staying dry. Seth, are you going to be able to do this for 4 hours? You were an Iron Man yesterday.
Yeah, it was easier than I thought it would be. I did 12 hours of radio. Well, 11 hours. I took a one-hour lunch break. So I did 11 hours of radio, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Wow.
But it was, look, compared to people that were actually out there trying to wade people out of trouble and everything.
You had a good day.
Yeah, I kept thinking, oh, I'm just sitting up here talking. The only thing I would worry about is that my voice would give out at some point today. I feel a little bit like that, but I got tomorrow off, so I'll
you'll be okay.
Only, I'd much rather have tired vocal cords than tired anything else. That's why the tired vocal cords, there's no actual misery involved in that. It's just that you can't do your job sometimes. As opposed to, say, when I was a kid baling hay, everything except my vocal cords hurt because I wasn't allowed to talk. So definitely not allowed to complain.
You're not allowed, that's the etiquette, is you're not allowed to talk while baling hay?
Not in my family. You're not allowed to talk as a kid when you're working for your grandpa.
Children really?
Are to be seen and not heard. And you're especially not supposed to bitch about it when you're 13 years old and baling hay.
Is there a machine that bales the hay, or did you actually have to take it straw by straw and turn it into one of those gigantic cubes?
I wove bales of hay.
I know it's a Football Friday, but I'm really intrigued by this hay baling.
How little you know. Yeah, you weave it on a loom. I weave round bales on a loom. There's a baling machine, and it kicks it up into... Sometimes when we were, depending on the farm, sometimes they have balers that just spit them out on the ground, and then you have to have usually the dumbest kids like yourself following behind. You have to throw the hay up onto a wagon, and then somebody up the wagon might stack them.
That's where they put the dullards in the back?
Yeah, me. That was, or now, and then once we advance to, you got some balers that actually kick it onto a wagon.
Okay.
And then you take the wagon, and then you use a conveyor belt, an elevator, to take the hay bales from the wagon into the hay mow. And then you stack them up there. And that's the hot, sweaty, nasty part of the job.
Okay, so how much of your football career and your success in football do you attribute to getting country strong from baling hay all those years early on?
I give it 83%.
Wow.
83% baling hay, 10% wrestling.
Okay.
And 7% actual football impression.
Actual football,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I think that baling hay and wrestling made me tougher and better than a lot of people in a lot of ways.
So am I
like, I wasn't a good enough athlete to play in the NFL, but I feel like I was tougher than a lot of guys.
Yeah. I would imagine it does toughen you up. Would you recommend to aspiring defensive linemen that forget about going to a pass rushing camp, or forget about, for some kids out there, 7-on-7 and things like that,
yeah,
go up to upstate New York, find a farm some hay balers.
Well, North Carolina or anywhere south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Because you'll get hot.
You need the heat element, too.
To get tough.
There's no, because my family, my grandpa was in, we lived in North Carolina when I was younger. I think a lot of kids, it's just hard to find a farm where you're going to go work anymore. There's so few farms out there, and the ones that are massive ones where they don't want some 16-year-old jackass necessarily. Yeah. If you would forego football camps for one summer and actually have your son work a really hard physical job, that would pay more dividends in their athletic career and in life.
Look at that.
Kids need to understand how much real work actually sucks.
Yeah.
Because once you know how much real work really, really sucks, you will do anything you can to not have that job.
Yes.
So if you're capable of moving on and beyond it, that's why sometimes I get a little harsh when somebody tries to tell me that I need to feel bad for a football coach because they work so many hours. I'm like, you weren't born into a cast.
Right.
Like you weren't born, like you chose that job.
Yeah.
All you guys have college degrees. You're choosing to work that many hours.
And this just thing, it pays really well.
Right. So whenever I work long hours, I've damn well made sure that it's a job like this.
Yes.
Where I'm not actually physically miserable, and I appreciate it. I don't complain about it. If you're working long hours, but you're in a job where you're not at risk of losing limbs, where you're not actually sweating all day long, all those things. You have no reason to complain.
So we say all that to say thank you to you, Landry, and Lopez for putting in those hours yesterday on the air. For breaking a radio sweat yesterday.
Yeah,
that was
right,
a radio sweat.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of sweat under the arms, maybe some flop sweat, and that's about it.
I'm just glad that it's. I'm just glad that right this moment now at 6:05 a.m. It's lighter out than it was at noon yesterday.
Wasn't that crazy? That was a crazy day, man. I hope all y'all did your best to stay dry. I know just from watching the news that not all of you did, and certainly those of you who didn't or who sat on highways yesterday waiting for water to subside or had your cars towed or even worse had your homes flooded again. So many stories of people who just gotten their homes rebuilt or redone from Harvey.
Yeah.
And then here comes this biatch Imelda in to go ruin all of everybody's good work.
The astounding number, because I remember sitting in League City during Harvey where we got hit as hard as we were one of the most hard hit places with the rainfall accumulations. And then as Harvey left, it seemed like League City, everywhere right around the bay there, it just, like, it stayed raining there.
Yeah.
As Harvey was moving out of town, it stayed raining. But that was over the course of several days. You find out that Winnie got hit with 42 inches in 24 hours. It's just, it's terrifying. Yeah. It's really, really awful.
Yep, it was bad. So we are certainly thinking about all of you. Good job by you guys yesterday once again. And then Thursday night football last night.
Rain there too.
There was rain there. Here's my thing on the AFC South so far this year, Seth, is that if Leonard Fournette is able to reach a football ahead by 6 inches and break the plane of the goal line against the Texans, the thing that everybody is talking about today is Gardner Minshew, the next Tom Brady.
Is
he the next sixth round pick
to
show that he's advanced beyond his years? And really put into question whether a guy who's a veteran guy, Foles in this case, is the Bledsoe of that scenario. Should Gardner Minshew, if the Jags are 1-2 right now, they got their first win. If they were 2-1 right now, and I haven't looked at their schedule, but if they got to the bye week, you know, that London game against the Texans, and say they win that, if they were like 6-3 at the bye week or something like that, people would be like, okay, well, why would you put Nick Foles back in?
Nick Foles, who's got $45 million guaranteed
on his contract
in Jacksonville.
Yep.
But look, sometimes these are the hard decisions you have to make. Drew Bledsoe, when he was benched for Tom Brady, had just signed a huge contract the year before. He was Bob Kraft's darling. Bob Kraft loved Drew Bledsoe.
Yep.
And that was before Bill Belichick had the clout or the track record to say, hey, this is the way it's going to be. So that was I wonder if people really appreciate how ballsy a move that was by Belichick to stick with Tom Brady there. So, like, with all the political stuff that goes on a team and where Belichick was at his career, at that point, he had a 500 career coaching record. He wasn't the guy that was known as the genius.
He had no ultimate success at that point.
So Doug Marrone, future Bill Belichick. Does Doug Marrone have the clout or the guts to pull that off? If Minshew continues on this pace, where now through his first three games, he's got one of the top, he's got the highest quarterback rating ever, I think, through three games. These includes people like Jim Kelly, which doesn't really count. Marcus Mariota, where you can say, all right. Carson Wentz.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing this from memory. I saw the tweet.
Yeah,
this
I didn't
morning.
See what you saw, so I'm just.
Going I was to, waiting I'm, for you I'm, to
I'm,
jump in.
No,
I
I'm accepting
you saw,
what you,
you
said as
like
fact.
RG3 is one of them.
Yeah, RG3
oh, and Pat Mahomes.
One. Okay.
So based on those other two, so of the top, he's in the top five.
Yeah.
Two of those
He's got a 110.6 quarterback rating.
Yeah.
Right now.
So between Carson Wentz and Jim Kelly, you'd say, okay, cool. I think I like those trajectories. If it was Marcus Mariota, who last night took 9 sacks.
Yes.
9 sacks Marcus Mariota took last night.
Yeah.
Some of them couldn't be avoided. Some of them could. And otherwise, his stats are a little misleading. He had 305 yards passing. That's the most he's had since September of last year.
It was
year.
A lot of garbage.
And it was garbage time. It was garbage yardage. So Marcus Mariota, they're already talking about him being benched. It was an interesting game last night. And we're sitting here as Texans fans maybe thinking where it had gone from, wow, the Texans are lucky that Nick Foles got hurt and that was an easier matchup for them. Maybe the Texans got lucky that they faced Gardner Minshew before he really grew into his own as a quarterback. Because I was nervous about Gardner. I've seen
you were nervous about him going into the game last week.
He's got the ability. I knew he had the ability to do what he did last night, but last night surprised me. Yeah. I didn't think that he didn't get sacked once against a defense in Tennessee that can throw some things at you that are confusing. I thought Tennessee's defense would really confuse him, maybe trap him a few times. Get him all out of sorts mentally. Man, he looked as calm as could be. Plus, his dad would kick your ass.
Yeah, that's why I don't want to say anything bad about him. Yeah. Dad looks like he used to compete in strongman competitions.
Yeah, he looks like he'd kick your ass and then like have a beer with your wife afterwards.
He's with your wife.
Yeah, like not he looks
make
like
you like it.
He's happily married now, but he looks like he's like that kind of guy. Yeah.
Here's Gardner Minshew's schedule over the next six games. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
At Denver next week. So he gets Denver on a long week. He's got an extra 3 days.
Denver is reeling. Their pass rush isn't what it's supposed to be.
So he's going against Joe Flacco. Mm-hmm. Week five, they're at Carolina. Who knows if Cam Newton's gonna be playing.
Yeah.
Week six, they play New Orleans at home. That'll be Teddy Bridgewater.
Mm.
Week seven, they're at Cincinnati.
Teddy Bridgewater. You know, they haven't. Sean Payton is still, he's still playing at coy about who's even starting this week. Unless I heard an update
It's not Drew Brees.
Right.
Then at Cincinnati, then he's got New York. Who knows if the mono is still in Sam Darnold's system at that point? They're basically, and then they
what
play
week
the Texans.
That? That's week seven.
Week eight.
I think Sam is hoping to be back by week six, I believe. But you're right. Who knows? He even said himself, I don't know. We don't know what this is.
And even with Darnold, it's the Jets at home. You should win that game.
It's Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam Darnold, the thing Sam Darnold has going for him in this analysis is he's not Luke Falk. Other than that, he's Sam Darnold, and then they play the Texans in London in week nine. Those are a bunch of winnable games.
So is Jalen Ramsey, when Sam Darnold comes in with his contagious self and ends up having to quarantine the entire city of Jacksonville, what are the chances that Jalen Ramsey is there?
Well, according to one tweeter who was covering the game last night, the tweeter would be Demetrius Harvey.
Oh, yeah, old DH.
Do you know him?
No.
Okay. Well, this is Jacksonville guy, okay. So I thought you might.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the lead editor and social media covering the Jacksonville Jaguars for some blog. Worth noting, Jalen Ramsey's locker was pretty much cleared out after the game last night.
And that was in Jacksonville, huh?
Yeah.
Boy.
Seems to me that Ramsey doesn't think he's going to be there.
He doesn't think he's going to be there. Is that a symbolic move? This is a guy who's into symbolism. He showed up in a Brinks truck before the season. Didn't do it all that well, but he showed up in a Brinks truck.
Could he be doing that just to keep attention going that doesn't have to be... Could it be a very passive-aggressive way of trying to garner attention without doing things that are bad for his Q rating, like publicly saying, I want to be traded.
Right.
He's clamming up, but this is maybe a way to do it where you go, what? I don't know what you're talking about.
It almost looks like he's the victim somehow or something. Like, wow, I've been evicted.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's like making it look like he's been evicted.
I like that.
So, Chris Mortensen said that Doug Marrone, or at least he said the coach, doesn't want the player gone, talking about, presumably Marrone doesn't want Jalen Ramsey gone. I would agree with that, I would imagine. It does seem like Doug Marrone is a kind of a wannabe hardo, but I also figure he's kind of a guy that figures you get in some arguments with guys and you figure it out and you move on. I think with Jalen Ramsey, as much as maybe there's some dysfunction within the Jacksonville organization, with Jalen Ramsey, I think he wants to be a star. And I don't think he's bashful about stating that. And it's hard to be a star in Jacksonville.
Yes.
This isn't the NBA where you can be a star anywhere.
Right.
Jacksonville is a small media market. It's in the AFC South where largely people are forgotten unless you're a huge fantasy performer. Like D-Hop and Deshaun are beloved around the country partially because of fantasy potential.
Yeah.
And I think with Jalen, some of it is he just wants to get out.
And the team's not good.
Right.
At its core. Like, if you win a bunch of games, then you'll get the team will get on the map somehow if you're winning. But if you're not winning, it's not an unconditional being on the map in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. So, but it doesn't jive necessarily. I know people have reported that he said he wanted to be, the Titans were one of the teams. That was when he was on a podcast with Taylor Lewan. I don't think he actually wants to go to Tennessee.
Might have been
and he's from there, but yeah.
You can text the show, 713-572-4610.
Yeah, do it. We got a really funny joke from Ocho, but we can't read it.
We can't read it. Ocho, we read your text about Antonio Brown and, Yeah, I'm not even going to read. I'm not even going to hint at what the text says because I'm afraid. It's very funny, but it's probably would get us in trouble.
Yeah, because, you know, and now I apologize to all the other listeners that we kind of teased you with that. Hey, we've got a good joke, but we're not allowed to tell
you. Yeah, I'm not even going to snap a picture of it and put it on social.
I'm guessing Ocho stole that from some website or something, so just Google Antonio,
Antonio Brown. Don't.
No, Adrian Peterson joke.
Okay.
Just do that.
There you go. We'll get to Antonio Brown here in just one second. Getting some texts about the game last night and about the AFC South. And there is one text, where is it here, that says, I'm a firm believer that the Jags still deserve to win the Texan game. The Jags are obviously the better team.
Well, what do you mean they deserve to win?
Look, I think the Texans were unlucky to not win the Saints game, and I think they were lucky to win the Jacksonville game. I think over the course of a 16-game season, the Texans are still going to wind up being a better team than the Jags.
The problem with that line of reasoning, though, is that you have to look at all the good luck the Jaguars had in that game, too. Both those teams, you're going to make an argument that both those teams were lucky not to lose the Jaguars-Texans game. Because the Jaguars, Minshew was strip-sacked three times. Mm. Three times. Do you know how lucky he was? And with a strip-sack, I'd like to know the stats on that.
And the Texans only recovered one of them.
Right, Texans only recovered one of them. So that alone is a stroke of luck, because usually there's a 50-50 chance. It comes down to dumb luck as to whether you recover a fumble or not, and you'd like to think it's all about hustle and all this stuff, but it's a lot of luck. I wonder with strip sacks, though, if the defense...
O'Brien, I guarantee you, thinks it's all about hustle.
I used to...
The guy who gives great effort on fumbles, he's a good teammate.
It used to drive me crazy because there were years...
Early?
I went a few years without recovering a fumble, and it was driving me nuts because a lot of times... Because I did think of it as, like, this is a hustle thing. Like, I'm a hustle guy. But sometimes you watch who recovers the fumble. Sometimes it's a guy who just has the dumb luck to be lagging behind a play and it bounces into their hands.
Okay,
But with a strip sack, I always felt like the defensive line should have the advantage because they're all facing the quarterback.
Right.
They see it come out where the offensive line is facing away.
Would Seth Payne, the player, have been a Bill O'Brien kind of guy?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't talk a lot when I was a player. I wouldn't be like, it's not
were
like
you a good guy
it's not
and
like
a good teammate?
Be getting up in the team morning meeting every morning and giving my take about Bill O'Brien's clock management.
That would be hilarious if you had done that as a player. But you
oh no, he would have given me the Nick Martin contract. I mean, way overpaid.
You know, like this guy's ahead of your time.
They like, this guy's a heart and soul player. He's tough, he's smart, he's dependable. We're going to give him a lot of money, and then my teammates would secretly hate
me. Your timing of being born cost you an $11 million a year contract.
I might make the argument that I got Nick Martin contracts based
just
on,
adjusted
yeah,
for
just
inflation.
Adjusted for the salary cap and everything, yeah. Yeah, I was, yeah. No, I was.
There's
never,
a reason I was in the expansion draft.
No, I know I was never the second highest paid. Highest paid defensive lineman. I know that
would have been awesome.
So, or just a defensive tackle. Yeah.
All right. Antonio Brown met with the media yesterday. I want to play his media session. Was a total of a little less than a minute. It was four questions, and the Patriots essentially yanked him. They couldn't have yanked him out of that media session faster. After the fourth question, the only thing that was missing was a gigantic cane to pull him out of there, like it's some vaudeville act.
They have to. I mean, they know the guy's a ninny. You can't trust him in front of a microphone.
We're gonna play the whole thing. Here's Antonio Brown's media session yesterday.
Is everything all right with you in the league? Are you in good standing?
I'm super grateful to be here to play for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. You know, I got a lot of the offense to learn and catch up. But I'm excited and grateful to be here and to be a part of these guys.
Antonio, what's it been like working with Tom?
It's been a tremendous honor. He's been here a long time, a lot of details, a lot of work ethic, a great guy to be around and just inspire everyone here.
How's the process been to kind of get used to everything as everything's going on in your life?
Well, it's football. You know, I'm grateful to play football. Every time you walk in the doors here, you know, be your best for the team. So every time I walk in here, I just want to make sure that I'm preparing to give these guys my best.
Antonio, what have you heard from the league, if anything, about your availability before?
I appreciate that question. You know, I'm just here to just focus on ball and look forward to getting out there in the home stadium and being with the team.
All right, session's over. That's pretty much what happened right after that. So that was Antonio Brown meeting with the media, kind of dodging the question of, How are you with the league right now?
The best thing that Belichick does, I think when he tells these guys, and he sets the example for himself, you don't even have to just deflect the question. Just act like the question was never asked
at
all. You just answer without even saying I'm not going to answer that or like trying to pivot at all. Just pretend like it was a completely different question that was asked.
I guarantee you Belichick's mad that Antonio Brown actually said the words, I appreciate that question.
Right. You didn't have to say,
just crumble and talk about the next opponent. That's what we do. So the story now with Antonio Brown, Seth, that came out overnight is we know that there's Brittany Taylor, who is his former trainer, who's accusing him of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Three different instances of it. And the league interviewed her earlier this week for 10 hours. So they sat down for 10 hours and talked about what happened allegedly between her and Antonio Brown. The other woman that's come forward in that Robert Klemko story that you and I talked about earlier this week on SI.com was the artist who Antonio Brown brought into his home in Pittsburgh from New York. He met her at a charity event. She had painted a picture of him at a charity event that he purchased and said, hey, can you come do a mural at my house? Of me, I guess, is what was being painted. So he brought her into New York.
I guarantee it was a Minotaur or something like
that.
Or a centaur. You want to be a centaur, right? Yeah, Minotaur's the goat.
A-Rod had a centaur picture. Yeah. So Antonio Brown.
Minotaur's a bull. That's better.
Either way.
Yeah, all right, go ahead. I'm going to think about this while you talk.
So he brought her in to paint this mural. And by the second day, he was walking up behind her with just a towel over his genitals, according to her.
Mm-hmm.
So this story came out in the Klemko article, and Antonio Brown yesterday started sending intimidating texts to her on a group text with four other people on it.
Allegedly, right? She claims that it was from him, right?
This would seem to be something pretty easy to trace, I would imagine.
Right.
Is a group text where
I'd be surprised if she tried to fake this, too. So,
where she photoshops some text
together.
Yeah,
she had some friend. Yeah, she didn't enter one of her friend's name as Antonio Brown and put it
right.
Now text me some intimidating texts.
Not that we've ever done that.
Okay, now this is the thing about these Antonio Brown texts we found.
Called her a super broke girl said, look up her background history.
Well, but it's hard to figure out if it's actually intimidating or just indecipherable, because you have to read them three times to figure out what he's even trying to say. Why don't you read it verbatim?
Seen these texts.
Try to convey the lack of punctuation.
Do you have copies of these texts? I'm only looking at an article that says the texts were sent.
Yeah, I saw them this morning when I came in.
Okay. Yeah, I hadn't seen the text, but...
So from what I saw, I read through once.
Okay.
And I read through once, and I'll be honest with you, in terms of whether you want to phrase it intimidating or if any threats were made, I would say they were definitely, they were not pleasant texts. Let's see. Because you remember, this is a woman who's making allegations.
Yeah,
against
yeah.
Him. Really sad you would make up BS story to the world. Okay, I'm going to remember. Apologies, everybody. I'm going to read this, and this is what it's like trying to read this.
So no punctuation.
No punctuation.
Yeah, okay, go.
Really sad you would make up BS story to the world. Thought you had more integrity and respect for yourself. Must be really hard times for you to make up some stuff for money. Super sad. This the girl who unfinished my painting in my room from Super Broke Girl with a lot of kids. Such a shame that her and text Eric
Dude.
B. Let's hook up her background history. See how broke this girl is from basically cried broke for opportunities. I let paint my room, so couldn't finish. I flew out. Now to hear this, so sad. And that's about it. Wow. So I have no idea what any of that means. But that's so far, that's not necessarily intimidating, right? That's kind of, that's mean.
It's mean, yeah.
It's mean. It's calling her broke and everything. Yeah. Let's see. Those her kids and IG Eric, she's awfully broke, clearly. According to that post, she was going for a Meek Mill rally. I can reach out to his team tomorrow and see if anyone knows. Oh, there's somebody responding to her. So I don't know. From those texts there, I don't see what's necessarily intimidating.
I guess this is where I come out on this. Seth.
Yeah.
And this is why I said he should be suspended for stupidity. Why are you texting her anything?
Yeah, exactly. Why just shut the hell up. And your insult, you're just insulting her for being broke or what have you.
Yeah.
It comes off really, really mean.
Yes. Which doesn't help.
And it doesn't paint a picture of Antonio Brown as somebody that is really
a victim, goes
through life thinking his way out, thinking situations out and what have you.
Right.
So, because now we have two instances where he's texted women who are accusing him of something, and you know his lawyers are telling him, don't text her, Antonio. Please, whatever you do, do not communicate with this woman until we let it play out through its legal course. And he can't help it. He sends off a stream of consciousness text, and he's just, with Antonio Brown, I'm trying to think if I ever knew a guy like him when I was playing, because there's something about him where you can just tell he's kind of divorced from reality. The way he talks, he's got kind of that Michael Jackson vibe to him. You know where when Michael Jackson, he'd be in interviews and he'd be like, okay, This guy is in a different universe.
Yes.
He just doesn't necessarily sense or experience reality the same way everybody else does. Antonio Brown talks like that, and that kind of dreamy vibe.
Yeah.
And you,
oh,
and
that's,
I think,
awesome.
Yeah.
That's booming.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Just like he's a fairy in a fairy tale or something, almost.
He's,
you know,
floating around like a feather
and
on
then
the breeze.
When you throw a bunch of money into that situation, things get really weird.
Yep.
Which is why I think Ryan Clark said back
in the
day,
he predicted all this.
When that guy gets paid, it's going to be trouble.
He's,
yeah,
Clark Stradamus.
Yeah.
He predicted all this. There's a really good article on The Ringer yesterday about Deshaun Watson. I'm finding that a lot of the people around the country are starting to, in the wake of Andrew Luck's retirement and Cam Newton basically being the equivalent of like a sports car with 250,000 miles on it,
yeah,
now. There's a lot of people worried about Deshaun Watson's well-being outside of the city of Houston.
You know who Andrew Luck has become? He's Macaulay Culkin. Just after Macaulay Culkin,
okay,
after Macaulay Culkin went through the tough time that he did, every other child star, people would say, how do we keep this precious star from becoming a Macaulay Culkin?
It was, before that, it was Drew Barrymore.
Oh, that's right,
remember,
yeah.
Drew Barrymore was the original Macaulay
she
Culkin.
She got it back together, fine.
She did.
She was like, you know what, Drew Barrymore kind of followed the life of a lot of women that grow up in New Orleans. They're like, they live a hard life through the teen years, and then they rebound and they're like, oh, okay, now I'm gonna get myself together and have a respectable life for myself.
Well, Drew Barrymore did the hard living that Hollywood types do from like age, if you're inclined to do these things, from like age 22 to like 32.
Well, I think even younger. Drew Barrymore started like doing hard drugs.
But I'm saying the average Hollywood star does that hard living in their 20s.
Oh, okay.
She just happened to do it from 8 to 15.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they usually take like 7 or 8 years to go through that, and either come out of it or you don't.
She's the good story. Jennifer Capriati would be like the negative one. She was an athlete, obviously.
She was.
But she never really rebounded.
Dad was a bad person.
So if we're looking at Deshaun,
Stefano.
Deshaun's gone through this abuse very early in his career.
Yes. Culkin-like.
How do you keep him from being Macaulay Culkin? How, yeah, do you get him to be instead, what's his name, from Happy Days there? Ron Howard.
Yeah.
You want him to be Ron Howard.
Kind of, except Ron Howard.
Well,
he never had
a rough stretch.
He became a director. I don't want Deshaun Watson to become an offensive coordinator.
No, you do. Because that's why he's not doing the dirty work at that point. You want him like Peyton Manning or Tom Brady.
Okay.
They become directors.
Ah.
That's why Tom Brady never gets the credit he deserves. Mm. People love looking at the Aaron Rodgers highlights. We're like, boom, look at that big pass. He's better than Tom Brady because it's a highlight. Go screw yourself. He doesn't conduct the offense. He doesn't conduct the offense. Okay. He's a Aaron Sanchez. You know what? Aaron Sanchez. Aaron is having elbow surgery.
Aaron Rodgers
is an awesome guitarist in a band. He's the lead guitarist in the best band
in
the world.
Eddie Van Halen.
But he's the best lead singer whereas Tom Brady is a conductor of an orchestra who takes and uses the abilities of other musicians and creates greatness from them.
Well, it's funny you bring up Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers is mentioned extensively in this piece that that Robert Mays did for The Ringer about Deshaun Watson. The title is, Deshaun Watson is the NFL's latest case study in keeping dynamic QBs healthy. And I was, as I'm reading this, I'm like, I can't wait to get Seth's thoughts on this.
Yeah.
Because it talks a ton about what Aaron Rodgers still does as a player, but especially what he was doing early on stylistically.
Yeah.
Stylistically, early Aaron Rodgers is very similar to early Deshaun Watson in terms of they don't exactly have the optimal length that they drop back. Deshaun will drop a little deep sometimes to clear himself a little space.
Yep.
They do a lot of impromptu scrambling that kind of jerks with the offensive line a little bit. This is not to stick up for the Texans' offensive line, which has been abjectly terrible over the last couple of years. It's merely to point out the fact that Deshaun Watson is complicit in some of these big sack numbers. And we've talked about that before. That's nothing new. We did a segment yesterday where you said, is Deshaun too,
he's too good under pressure
for his own good?
Yeah.
For his own good. And they basically say that in this article here. But here's what I thought was interesting, Seth, is they talked to some of Aaron Rodgers' offensive linemen. They talked to Bakhtiari in here. They talked to TJ Lang in here. And they talk about how early on it was really hard to block for him. Because even just the slightest movement within the pocket that you're not expecting, offensive linemen are expecting to steer you, defensive linemen, to a certain,
yep,
place. They're not expecting to put you on your back every play.
Yeah.
They're expecting to steer you to a place to create an opening for their quarterback to execute the offense.
In their world, ideally, it's like a game of capture the flag, where the flag is sitting on a fence post, and that stays where it is, and you can protect that at all costs.
Yes.
And it gets a lot more difficult when the flag starts moving around.
The flag starts moving around. What I thought was interesting in this article is that some of these Packer linemen who said, it made it really hard the first few years we blocked for this guy, which I would imagine is something that the Texans' offensive linemen are feeling to some degree with Deshaun right now. It actually said that at some point, once you become proficient for blocking for a guy like that, and it takes a little while.
Yeah.
But once you do, it's actually something you can almost use as a weapon.
Uh-huh.
Where they see they're able to read the eyes of a defensive lineman and able to sort of see what they're able to
where the quarterback's drifting.
Right, with their back to Rodgers, they're actually able to use what's in the eyes of the defensive lineman to accomplish what they want to accomplish on a play.
So they can.
Are you buying that as a former defensive lineman?
No, I'm buying that because the defensive linemen do the same thing a lot of times where you try to influence the offensive lineman into thinking you're reading. Sometimes you'll try to influence an offensive lineman. You want them to believe that you're making the wrong read. And then they adjust to that, and then you throw back into
There's
the play.
There's a lot of caginess going on down there, man.
Cool. Well, it's the kind of stuff that's fun, because you get that's how you get extra years. That's how, like, JJ, like I said, last year, JJ got 16 sacks. He wasn't nearly the physical specimen he was when previous in his career he was getting double-digit and teen sacks. It's that a lot of it was stuff like that, that kind of just making an offensive lineman think he's beating you and then ambushing him back, stuff like that, that JJ's really crafty at. I think where all of this is true, all of this, everything in this article is true, that these things do happen. I do think that part of the problem with trying to judge Deshaun Watson and blaming him for some of the sacks are that there are times where, yes, he's holding onto the ball too long, but you're also using two extra guys in pass protection. So there's genuinely nobody open downfield. There are times where Deshaun doesn't check down when he should check down. That's true. But there are also times where people simply aren't open because you're using a tight end and a running back and maybe another tight end to pass block because the offensive line is struggling. So it kind of, there's a chicken and the egg element there to it. Also, I think that sometimes Deshaun does drop too deep. Sometimes it's as simple as if he hadn't dropped so deep, he could take one simple step up in the pocket and he'd be all right. But there are also other times where I think for a young player, I think he has a pretty good sense for pocket mobility. We're not scrambling, but stepping up, and I think he's done a better job of it this year, stepping up and just taking a couple steps to the left or the right, and that actually helps the offensive lineman out as opposed to making it confusing for him. So, but there's a lot in here, and it's that murky issue of it's not always the offensive line's fault, it's not always the quarterback's fault, but sometimes it's harder than you might think to figure out whose fault it
is. Yeah, well, and what's interesting, too, about this article is it points some of the blame at Deshaun, points some of the blame at the offensive line, and we're talking about this article on The Ringer where it talks about how the Texans can keep Deshaun Watson healthy. It also, they interviewed Dan Orlovsky for this piece, and he says something in here that Clint Sterner has been saying since last season.
Mm-hmm.
Clint Sterner has been saying this since he started coming on Thursdays last season when I was in afternoons, and it's that a lot of this falls on Bill O'Brien and his play calling. That there are deficiencies, there are aspects to Deshaun's game, there are aspects to this offensive line that, yeah, these are things that need to be fixed, but in the absence of fixing them, you need to do a better job of calling plays around it. You need to do a better job of understanding your personnel's, their deficiencies, the things they need to improve on, and do a better job of play calling. Orlovsky says it has to fall on Bill O'Brien at this point. And it does make me wonder, as I was reading that yesterday, that I know Bill O'Brien. I believe him when he says he's making all these moves, the Clowney trade, the Tunsil trade, Carlos Hyde, whatever move, cutting guys, bringing. I do believe he's doing these in the best interest of the team because ultimately Bill O'Brien just needs to win football games. That's
right.
I don't think at this point Bill O'Brien needs to prioritize where the blame goes versus winning games. Like, the blame's all going to go on him at this point. It did make me wonder, though, like making a trade like he did for Laremy Tunsil in some ways could be a statement like, see, it really is the offensive line that's the issue.
Well,
I know that I'm part of it and Deshaun's part of it, but man, the issue, though, is so bad that we had to trade two firsts and a second to fix it.
There's something to be said for, I was encouraged by some of the things the offensive line did last week. Like, really encouraged about it. Not just
Explain.
Kind of encouraged. There were some things they did in the run game that I was almost starting to wonder if the Texans' offensive line was capable of doing in terms of just working in coordination with each other, getting the timing right, passing blockers off, doing all of those things. They showed some really good examples of it. They weren't perfect at it by any means, but to the point where a little bit of it was a reminder that, oh, what? You know what? Maybe just simply having better athletes out there does make that big of a difference. And
they've got better athletes.
Right, because Titus Howard had some very rookie moments. He had some bad plays that were rookie bad plays, but he also had some really good plays that were simple as, oh, he's a better athlete than Xavier Suafilo. He's a better athlete than Senio Calamete. He's not as savvy as either of those guys are at this point in his career, but it just looks better when he's out there. So that would be an argument in favor of Bill O'Brien just saying, look, we haven't had good offensive linemen out there. It's funny. I had a dream last night that David Barron from the Chronicle wrote an article talking about how Seth Payne is too mean to Bill O'Brien.
It was
a weird dream.
Was it just the article that was in the dream, or did David Barron show up in the dream saying, hey, did you see my article?
No. It was just David Barron's article. Okay. I was reading this article where it was saying that the problem with our show that I was too mean to Bill O'Brien.
That was the problem with our show?
So I'm
saying,
did he say
anything about me
in
the article?
Am I too mean to Bill O'Brien? No, it's just me. It was very focused on me. So I'm very egotistical in my dream. So... But look, I've been pretty mean to Bill O'Brien at times and pretty critical of the way he runs the offense. I will say, and I think this is where Clint and I differ a little bit. Whenever I see an offense not doing something, and I do this with basketball also, I always try to remember, all right, the coach, even though we like to call coaches idiots, they're not actually idiots, but sometimes they don't do things that we want to see them doing. When I'm seeing an offense and they're not doing things that seemingly would help them, is there a logical reason why? And usually what the logical reason is that coach doesn't trust his personnel to do what they're doing. So when there's simple things like that last year, I would have liked to see more. I'd like to see more pre-snap motion out of the wide receivers. I would have liked to see more quickly developing routes. There are explanations for why those things didn't happen last year. And it doesn't completely excuse the coaches, but I think O'Brien knows his personnel better than we do. I'd like to think he does. Yeah. He also started Aaron Colvin, but Aaron Colvin got 56 snaps in week one and then got released from the team the next day. He also started Chantrell Henderson at right tackle.
Bench.
So I want to believe he knows more about his personnel, but those are two moves that I thought should have been made before the season began.
Yeah, why'd you start playing real games with those guys?
So that's where it gets dicey. I honestly 100% want to make excuses for the coaches, but then when they do things that make me want to yank that excuse back, it's hard for me to make excuses for Bill O'Brien and some of the things he didn't do last year.
Yeah, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. We're talking about the Texans protecting Deshaun Watson. The sack that Laremy Tunsil gave up in the Saints game, which just pure optics to a regular person who's not counting how many steps Deshaun Watson is taking back in the pocket, looks like, well, Laremy Tunsil got beat off the edge and the guy made a beeline for the quarterback and he sacked him. They point out in this article that sack in that Saints game, you know the one I'm talking about, Seth, where that dude got up underneath him and just basically beat him to the corner and got to Deshaun Watson. They said that Deshaun dropped back like 2 yards too far on that play.
Yeah.
On that play. So it was an interesting read. It had a lot of video in there that showed like, okay, I could see where it's not the easiest thing in the world to block for this guy.
I'll go back to one of my old fears about Bill O'Brien, and it's this. And every single offensive coach that comes out of New England, and it was... It's a fear that was substantiated in my mind when I read this Ian O'Connor book about Bill Belichick. My fear is that Tom Brady, much like a guy who grows up in a small town and ends up dating this girl who's way hotter than he has any right to date, but they're in a small town and she doesn't know any better, and then she dumps him when she goes off to college, and then for the rest of his life, he thinks that that's like that he actually deserves a girl like that, you know? I worry that Tom Brady ruins these coaches and that they don't actually even appreciate Tom Brady. In this book, an unnamed Patriots coach said basically that Tom Brady's just an average quarterback and that the Patriots system and coaching could do the same thing with any of the top half quarterbacks in the league.
Feels like that's what they've all been trying to do.
And that's what, And I think they really hold that system up so high that they don't understand So far, Tom Brady's the only one that successfully runs that system. It's a Tom Brady system. Mm-hmm. That you need to have a guy with an incredibly big football brain running that system that can make snap decisions, that holds his receivers to ridiculously high standards, that does all these things. And look past the weaknesses in his arm and look past all these other physical athletic weaknesses. Tom Brady's brain is the equivalent of running a 4-1-40. Yeah. And it's not so simple as just plugging Brian Hoyer into it and expecting similar results.
That was a fun season when they plugged Brian Hoyer into a game plan offense. That was really good. By the way, Laramie Tunsil, in a piece that Aaron Reese did for The Athletic, it was a funny scene. This is real quick. He was apparently the reporters were standing around when one of them told Tunsil that it might have been according to Pro Football Focus. One of the sites said that he was responsible for three of the sacks that were given up in week one.
Yeah.
And Tunsil apparently like walked away and said, man, y'all just messed up my whole day. I like that.
I really...
Taking it personal.
You can't... I completely 100%. Given when I've gone back and kind of evaluated the Pro Football Focus grades of offensive linemen the last couple of weeks, man, completely useless.
Yeah.
Like 100% worthless. Yeah. Totally worthless. Yeah. It's crazy. It's
You're not
going
to be doing live reads for them anytime
soon. No.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.